Hello, and thanks for tuning in to kpcradio.com. It is currently 1:30 p.m. on Monday, March 27th. I'm your host, Skylar Lester, and you're listening to Exposure, where we shine light on notable figures in the world of photography. Today's guest is astrophotographer and LA Times staffer Raul Roa. In the past, Raul has worked for the Pasadena Star News. He is passionate about travel and nature photography, and also is an avid birder. Hello, Raul. Thank you so much for coming on Exposure.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So you've been a professional photographer for more than 20 years. How is it that you got your start?
Well, I like everybody else, I took classes in college at LA City College, and then at a school in Covina called the Tri-Community Photo Center. Mm-hmm. And that's how I started in newspaper journalism. But before that, in high school, you know, we used to take photos of different things and stuff like that. So.
Was it for a publication or
for? No, it was for my geology class, actually. Oh. We used to go out and take photos.
Interesting.
Of whatever we collected, so we had to document.
That's really cool. Yeah. And it seems like science kind of plays a big part in your photography anyway. So is that kind of where that started, you think?
Yes, it does. I like nature. I like being outdoors. I like to travel. So I always carry my cameras with me. Mm-hmm. And it's a big opportunity to capture what many people can't see mm-hmm. while you're out there.
And, you really focus on capturing a lot of nature's beauty. So what is it that drew you to nature photography?
Well, you know, it's just seeing what life is like out there, you know, the animals, the plants, you know, just the nature, the landscapes. It's just an amazing world we have out there. And a lot of times people don't have a chance to go out and see what's out there, you know, so... It's a pleasure being out in the outdoors and, you know, enjoying yourself mm-hmm. and at the same time capturing some images.
Yeah, being able to share that with people who might not have the chance to get out there themselves. Do you mostly photograph California wildlife and scenery?
Yes, mostly California. I do travel a little bit out of state, you know, sometimes, but it's mostly here in California, northern and southern California.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say is the most difficult part about photographing nature and animals?
Well, the most difficult part about, I'll start with birds, that they don't sit, you know, for too long.
Mm-hmm.
You see something, you know, see a nice bird, and then he'll move away right away. You know, they won't sit there for you. They won't pose.
Mm-hmm.
So out of maybe 100 shots I get, I'll have one or two good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the other things like plants, flowers, all that stuff, just the way they, you know, you want to get a perfect one, but a lot of times they're not. So I just shoot what I see, you know. I don't try to compose anything, you know, move things out of the way, move a little blade of grass out of the way, or, you know, I just shoot the way I see them. Because that's the way they are, you know. There's a lot of people that, you know, try to get the perfect shot of a plant or a, you know, flower or something, but it's really difficult, and I just like to document the way things are. And that comes back to my journalism, where we're not allowed to set up anything. So I just go with what I have and come back with that.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, applying those ethics of photojournalism to everything you do and broader kind of nature work as well.
Yes, I try to keep it like that so that the image is more constant with what I believe in, what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, I don't set up 99% of my stuff. Sometimes I will set up some things for my personal things, mm-hmm. but it's in journalism, you're not allowed to do that. So
right.
That's why I kind of convey my work. Most of my work that you see, it'll be just the way it is, just the way it happened.
Mm-hmm. Follows those guidelines.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned birding. Do you go and, like, look at birds with binoculars, or are you always photographing them, or is it a little bit of both?
Well, I do have binoculars, but I hardly use them.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather see what the bird is doing, watching it move around the trees or on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I follow with a 300-millimeter lens, which mm-hmm. is really not that long mm-hmm. for birding. And then I just try to capture, as they move along, what they're doing. I try to, you know, stay out of their way and just capture whatever they're, you know, feeding or just singing or whatever they're doing.
Mm-hmm. So. Do you have a favorite bird?
Well, there is one here. I'll tell you the story. One time I went to the Galapagos Islands,
mm-hmm.
so I wanted to see a specific little red bird, which is called a vermilion flycatcher. So we went to Galapagos and spent 10 days over there. We looked for it for one day. We didn't see it. I came back, and a few days later, someone reported one maybe about 40 minutes from my house in Whittier. They reported a little farther east in Chino.
Wow.
I went and I saw it, and I found it. I photographed it. Very nice. The bird was very pleasant to see. So I traveled, you know, a long ways away to see what, and I didn't see him. But when I got back, there it was, right down the street from my house, basically.
How funny. So sometimes you don't have to go very far to find what you're looking for.
No, not really.
That's so interesting. And what would you say, I mean, you mentioned the Galapagos Islands. What would you say some of the coolest destinations that your photography has taken you to?
Lake Tahoe is really nice. You know, I've been out there. Northern California, I love Highway 1, mm-hmm. you know, up the coast. Specifically, you know, Big Sur.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of beautiful scenery out there. I've been out to Utah, all the national parks out there. You know, Arizona has some fantastic places. I've been to a place called The Wave, which you can only get in there by permit. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to get, you know, the permit. They only allow, I believe it's 10 people a day to hike into that area.
Wow.
So there's been a few places that I really enjoy. I've been lucky to see.
Mm-hmm. And how is it that you acquired the permit?
You have to, it's through lottery. So you have to apply once a month through the Bureau of Land Management website. And so from the thousands of people that apply for each day, only 10 get to go in there.
Wow. Is that for conservation reasons?
Yes, it's so that people don't trample through the rocks, mm-hmm. because it's rock formation that's been formed by wind and sand. You know, the sand itself blowing through it's sandstone. Mm-hmm. So the wind blowing through it and water have formed it to look like a wave, you know, ocean wave.
Cool.
So they don't want too many people trampling through it, so they only allow 10 a day.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, yeah, that's one of the...
That's a special opportunity.
Yes.
Very cool. Was. And what kind of images did you capture there?
Well, I got people, you know, walking in there so I can show the relative size of the image. I got shots of our trek through the 3 miles of basically desert sand and rocks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an iconic image that you probably have seen on your iMac when it goes to sleep and it shows images of landscapes.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one where you see the rocks kind of wavy and orange.
Mm-hmm.
That's that location.
Neat. So travel's a big part of your life. If you could hop on a plane tomorrow and go anywhere in the world, where would you choose?
Well, I probably want to go to Iceland or Japan.
Mm.
I want to see those two locations.
And so, what would the reasons be for each?
Well, simply because they have a scenery that we don't have here that I haven't seen. And I always want to expand in my knowledge of other people's cultures and the way other people live and what they have, you know, in their surroundings.
Mm-hmm. In Japan, too, they have the cherry blossoms. I can definitely see you taking pictures of that, given your flower photography.
They also have some monkeys that, in the wintertime, they go into a hot spring to warm up.
Uh-huh.
So that's, and you saw, you know, there's some iconic images of the monkeys, you know, the snow coming on,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
falling on them, and they're sitting in the warm water, relaxing.
Just relaxing.
Sleeping, yeah.
That sounds like the life.
Yeah.
And what about Iceland?
Well, they have it's a volcanic island, so they have a lot of, you know, a lot of different scenes that we don't have here. You know, they have, they have icebergs, and then they have a lot of hot water, you know, mm-hmm. coming out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just different landscape that I like to see.
Yeah.
I like to experience that.
A lot of geological wonders.
Yes.
Over there. Cool. So I know you do a lot of work focusing on the night sky. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about your astrophotography?
Yes, well, there's what we like to do when we go out is we like to capture the stars themselves, you know, the Milky Way, which is one exposure, you know, a long exposure. And then we also like to capture star trails, which is a compilation of multiple images put together to capture the circular motion of the stars around the North Star. Or you can also, you know, shoot different locations up in the sky. It doesn't have to be towards the north. and you get a variety of different different images of how the stars move through the sky. So the longer you allow your settings to continue taking pictures, the better your star trails will look.
Mm-hmm. So typically, how long do you spend on an image?
Usually, if you want to do some star trails, you need about 2 to 3 hours mm-hmm. of images at about 30 seconds. That's the longest you can expose, about 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So you may end up with 200 to 300, 400 images.
And what are some of the locations you travel to get these star images?
Anywhere that's dark. Like I said, Lake Tahoe is really nice. Joshua Tree National Park is really nice. Up in Death Valley. Mm-hmm. So anywhere away from city lights
mm-hmm.
is nice to see, because city lights kind of tend to block out the stars.
Right. And you take a lot of photos of the moon, specifically of airplanes crossing in front of it. So I'm wondering, does the visual of a plane and the moon together represent something to you?
Well, you know, what it represents to me, it's the way that nature and man are, you know, always interconnected. But what I like about it is that it's really difficult to capture.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm lucky enough to live, I live in Whittier, so I live right under the flight path of planes coming towards LAX.
Oh, okay.
And they're at the proper altitude that's needed to get a plane within the moon itself. Mm-hmm. So any farther back, they'll be too small. Any closer to the airport, they'll be too big.
Mm-hmm.
So I just happen to live, just by chance, to live in the right spot to capture those images.
That's fortunate.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, he has these amazing images of the moon just looking giant, and then you have the silhouette of a plane, which pretty much blocks the front of the moon, and it's just incredible. I highly recommend you check out his work when it comes to the night sky. So I'm also wondering, I saw some of your pictures from the New Mexico Balloon Festival in 2016. What was it like going to that?
Well, that one I didn't get a chance to because I got sick, but I had planned to go.
Uh-huh.
And but the balloon festival, I've done it up in Napa Valley,
uh-huh.
which is really nice. You know, it's not as extensive as in New Mexico,
uh-huh.
but Napa is really nice too. Just seeing the balloons go up in the sky, in a nice big blue sky in the mornings,
uh-huh.
it's an amazing sight to see.
How many balloons would you estimate are there?
Well, up in Napa, there's from a dozen to a few dozen, you know. In mm-hmm. New Mexico, there's hundreds.
Hundreds, yeah.
Yeah, but that's one thing I wanted to do last year, which I, you know, unfortunately fell sick
mm-hmm.
and wasn't able to go. But it's always something that I want to do, and I probably will do it next year.
Awesome. Yeah, it just looks amazing.
Yeah.
And you also have a photo book. Published. What is the subject of that book?
The subject is just my night photography, mm-hmm. moon and planes and star trails and Milky Way shots.
Mm-hmm.
And it only has about 40 or 50 images.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something I did on my own, and I only have a few copies that I was able to do, and I gave one to my dad because he likes my picture sometimes. And then I have one in my house, you know,
nice.
For people to see.
Very nice. Yeah, it's a great way to display your work for, mm-hmm. for a lot of photographers, to make a book and just kind of get it out there, have something tangible that people can flip through and appreciate.
Yeah, nowadays, you know, with you can publish a book anytime you want, you know,
mm-hmm.
with this internet company. So if you have some really nice images, I recommend you put something together.
Yeah.
So that at least just to keep a record of your work, because a lot of time I can't find photos that I took, you know, 15 years ago.
Yeah, things
so,
get lost in the digital universe.
Exactly. So, you know, it's a good way to hold on to something that, you know, you might lose later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a lot of easy ones like blurb.com. What was it that you used?
Shutterfly, I believe.
Shutterfly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another good one. Cool. And I wanted to talk a little bit about your job at the LA Times. How is it that you got that job?
Well, I was, how I began my career. First, out of Citrus College, that's where I went to school for journalism.
Mm-hmm.
They were looking for two freelance photographers for the San Gabriel Valley Tribune. So me and a friend went over, and we started working for them as we finished school. And fast forward about, once I graduated, I stayed working there freelance for them for about 10 years. Finally, you know, the staff photographer positions are really hard to come by. Mm-hmm. Finally, one of them opened up, and I was hired as a staff photographer. So I worked there for almost 5 years for the Star News, Pasadena Star News, San Gabriel Valley Tribune, and the Whittier Daily News, which are the three papers that cover that area. Then I had a chance to go to the LA Times Community News, which is we cover Burbank, Glendale, and La Cañada, and I've been there for 7 years. But, you know, staff positions are really hard to come by, mm-hmm. and I'm just fortunate that I was able to get in and, you know, still have a job as a staffer.
Yeah, definitely. And what exactly does your job entail?
Well, I cover anything that is going on during the day. So, you know, news, features, sports, portraits, food photography, mm-hmm. anything that has to do with newspaper photography, we all have to do.
Okay. And you said you've been there for 7 years?
Yes, about 7.5 years now. So wow. It goes by fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what big events have you covered through that job?
Well, I've covered, Obama coming by, visiting Southern California. I've covered just a couple days ago, I covered one of the Make America Great rallies down in Orange County, mm. where it kind of, you know, got violent.
Really?
So.
Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, well, rally started as, you know, peaceful. Mm-hmm. And there's always counter-protesters there, so
right. There's
always going to be some tension. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. this time, people started fighting and all that. But,
wow.
You know, you have to be ready for whatever happens.
Yeah, so in that situation, you're just really focused on
you have to focus,
documenting it. And
yeah, you, I mean, you want to be close, but not close enough to get hurt.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, although I was within a foot or so from the action, you know, I always, you know, kept an eye out to see if, you know, just stay out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
You have to stay out of the way because you don't want to get involved with the situation. What do you want to capture? What's going on?
Right. You want to document the news, not become it.
Yes, exactly.
And so, I mean, with the current political climate, there's been a lot of, tension when it comes to the media, distrust. So have you experienced anything like that as a photographer documenting these rallies? Has anybody...
Well, you know, not just in rallies like this. There's been plenty of times in my career that people don't want me to be there. They don't like what we do,
mm-hmm.
simply because they don't trust the media. But that just comes with the territory. You have to be, you know, you have to let it slide off,
mm-hmm.
and keep doing your work.
Yeah, just because, do your job.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, what you do is very important to the community.
Mm-hmm.
So documenting what's going on should be number one priority, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't argue with people. I don't, you know, try to get involved with what they're doing. I just do my job and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as far as workshops, do you attend and or host any?
I don't attend workshops because I'm pretty busy, you know, with a family and working and all that. But I do attend, I do hold some workshops once in a while, especially in the spring and summer,
mm-hmm.
for astrophotography. And some for the moon and plane shots.
Cool.
So people can come out and learn what I do like that. I teach them how to do it.
Mm-hmm. And what does the typical workshop look like? Like, how would it start?
Well, first, I show my attendees what work is expected to be done that day.
Mm-hmm.
I go through the settings of the cameras, you know, how to the techniques and all that of how to do that. Those type of images,
mm-hmm.
and then we just get down and start doing it.
Cool. Yeah. So it's pretty hands-on.
Hands-on all the way. Mm-hmm. So,
and so you're meeting at night because it's
focused
on the night sky. And generally, how many people are in the workshops?
It depends. You know, it could be anywhere from 2 to 3 up to 10, 15. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the night, people usually go home with some amazing images.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's worth it to come out.
That's awesome. And do you have any coming up pretty soon?
I haven't scheduled any yet, but I usually start them somewhere around May,
mm-hmm.
you know, May, June, July. So,
and is the reasoning for that having to do with what you see in the sky?
Yeah, well, Well, the moon and plane shot's there every month, but the last few months has been cloudy with our, you know, weird weather we've been having. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start scheduling them again probably next month, the monthly moon and plane shots. And then the Milky Way and Star Trails, that'll also come more towards the summer. That's when the Milky Way is much better up in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And you've recently gone and photographed some of the wildflower blooms. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, you know, with the recent rains we've had in the winter, the flowers are blooming much better than in regular years because we're kind of a dry climate. But I've been to a few places where the poppies have been coming out really nice. Mm-hmm. And then I just came back from Anza Borrego State Park, where they still have plenty of really nice-looking desert flowers.
Mm-hmm. And so, what kind of flowers do you see there?
Well, in the desert, you see just a lot of, you know, mostly cactus flowers. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of smaller desert flowers that tend to stay close to the ground. Mm-hmm. But you also see some daisy types and marigold types that, you know, they're pretty big flowers, mm-hmm. like regular-sized flowers. So it's a... Most of the bigger flowers are carpeting the desert floor right now. Wow. So it looks really nice. You know, it's really colorful yellows and greens.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it sounds beautiful. And how long do you think that the flowers will be there?
Well, with the heat increasing daily out in the desert especially, mm-hmm. flowers don't last that long, maybe a few weeks and that's it.
Wow. Okay, so if you want to go document the flowers yourself, then you need to get out there pretty soon.
Rush out there, yeah.
I wanted to kind of tie things up as usual by making sure to share your website URL with our listeners so they can check out some of your work.
Yeah, my website is just my name, raulroa.com, and as is my Twitter and my Instagram feeds, okay. raulroa.com. In Instagram, I also have one called Journalism Picks. And that's mostly for work.
Okay. And it's
RAULROA. Yes. RAULROA.com and RAULROA for Instagram and Twitter.
Great. Easy peasy.
Yeah.
And so that's where everyone can go and see all of these amazing pictures that you have. Did you have a website for the workshops that you have coming up, or is that all on your
page? That goes through raulroa.com.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. So it's all in one place. Everyone can go find everything there. Wonderful. Well, it looks like we're out of time for today, but thank you so much for joining us on Exposure.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Definitely. And just a reminder for our listeners, next Monday the 3rd, we will not be having a show because the station will be closed for spring break. Enjoy your time off of school and have a safe break. For KPCRadio.com, I'm your host, Skylar Lester.